Riding in abreast of the Blessing Game's 3 post-laden wagons, Doug found that Stubb Bailey and Noah Wheeler had been busy while he was gone.
Foley, watch out for those stakes yonder. They mark where the posts are to be set.
Foley saw them and swung his mules a little to the right so the heavy wheels would pass between 2 stakes set a rod apart. Stubb Bailey rode out grinning to meet the wagons. He shook Doug's hand and motioned toward the line of stakes.
Half afraid you wasn't coming back, Doug. I sure would have hated to drive all them stakes for nothing.
His gaze roved over the Blessing Games wagons, and especially over the Blessing Games themselves.
Man alive, they all come out of the one family? I'd sure hate to be the woman who had to give birth to that bunch.
Well, they came one at a time, I reckon. They'll haul in all the posts we need, then stay and help us build the fence.
I'll bet they can make a pick and shovel sing Dixie.
First Reinhardt man who gets himself crossways with him may sing a little, too.
Big old Noah Wheeler was standing in front of his barn waiting as the 3 heavy wagons rolled up, their iron rims grinding deep tracks into the shower-dampened earth, crushing the cured brown grass.
Howdy, Doug. Looks like you brought the makings.
Doug stepped off his horse and shook the farmer's rough hand.
Ought to be enough posts to get us started. Plenty more where these came from. Wire ought to be here by the time we get enough posts up to commence stringing it.
Monahan hadn't realized how tired the long ride had made him until he sat down a moment on the barn's front step. He was glad to be back here. He felt himself drawn to this pleasant place with its good corrals, its scattering of Durham cattle, its ducks swimming out there on the surface tank, and his chickens scratching around in the yard. He liked the Wheeler's little red frame house with the front porch that would be so good for sitting and rocking in the late summer evenings. Without wanting to show it, he looked around for Trudy Wheeler and felt vaguely disappointed that he didn't see her anywhere.
How's the family, Noah?
Fine. Getting along fine. Halfway thought they'd come out to take a look, but I reckon not. Doug, in case they say anything, don't worry yourself too much about it.
What do you mean?
They're not as much in favor of this fence as I thought they'd be. Fact of the matter, they're against it. You know how women are. Or do you? You're not married, are you?
No, sir.
Time you get married, you'll know what I mean. A man ought to go ahead and do what he wants to and not let women bother him, I guess. Ought to let them know he's the boss. But when the time comes, you hate to do it. A man who's got women folks has just got to put up with a certain amount of that, I reckon.
Doug had an uneasy moment, afraid Noah Wheeler was leading up to calling the whole thing off. He thought of Captain Reinhardt and of his foreman, Archer Spann, and he felt his heart quicken. Wheeler couldn't call it off now and cheat Monahan out of the satisfaction he'd get from humbling them.
I thought maybe we'd start down on the southwest corner and work up. That's where the most of the strays come in from, and we'll cut them off first.
There was the immediate problem of getting settled. Best thing to do with the posts was to unload them right where they would be needed.
Where you be putting up, Doug?
When Doug showed Foley the barn, the old cedar cutter shrugged.
If it's all the same to you, we'll just put up our tent when we bring that last load of posts. Me and the kids is used to it, and the barn won't be none too roomy anyhow with this crew you got.
Dundee had brought out 4 men. At the side of the barn, Doug rigged up 3 posts and stretched a tarp to them from the edge of the roof. This cover would help protect the cook in bad weather. They could set up a stationary chuck box out here under the tarp. The cook could have his fire just beyond it, where the smoke would lift clear and not drift back underneath. The cook was Simon Getty, the grunting, red-faced man Doug had picked up in Torrance's livery barn. Monahan had borrowed a horse from Torrance so the cook could ride with him. Torrance was to pick up the animal when he brought the wire. But the cook had barely managed to stay on him to the Blessing Games camp. From there, he'd ridden the last wagon. Getty was a shortish man with a puffed face and a soft paunch. And it had developed a short temper. He hadn't been in condition to do the cooking the first night at the Blessing Games, but he had done it since. He put up a pretty decent meal, too, from men didn't mind listening to him complain. Stubb Bailey walked up to Doug.
Did you go over and see what cooking equipment you could salvage from Paco's camp?
I went over, but there wasn't anything left. Somebody beat us to it. Stole every Dutch oven, bean pot, knife, fork, and spoon there was. Even a couple of wagon wheels that the spokes hadn't burned out of.
I was counting on that stuff. Been borrowing from the Blessing Games, and I didn't want to keep on doing it. Took everything we had, did they?
One of them poverty nester outfits over on Oak Creek, I figured. Took everything but the posts and burned up wire. I don't reckon there's anybody fool enough to want that. By the way, there's plenty of good posts over there in the ground. They ain't set so hard yet, but what we could take, a good team of mules, and yank them out of the ground one at a time.
Gordon Finch's post. He paid me cash for him. He can take him up himself if he wants to.
Out of the corner of his eye, Doug kept watching for Trudy Wheeler to show herself. But so far as he could tell while they were setting up camp, she never did. She was staying in the house. Late in the afternoon, everything was in its place. The Blessing Games wagons had been unloaded and made ready for a return trip after more posts tomorrow. The cook had a fire going just beyond the tarp on the side of the barn. It'd be a while before supper. Doug walked to the Wheeler's house up onto the porch. Mrs. Wheeler opened the door. Doug took off his hat. This tall, strong, graying woman looked at him with no unfriendliness, but with no special welcome.
Good evening, Mrs. Wheeler.
Good evening, Mr. Monahan.
I've gotten everything in order, and I thought I'd come over and pay my respects.
That's nice of you.
Monahan tried to see around her, but he couldn't spot Trudy Wheeler. He could tell that Wheeler had been right about the women. They weren't strong at all on this fencing business. It showed on Mrs. Wheeler with her withdrawal from her inborn hospitality. She was vastly different from the last time he'd been here. It became evident that she wasn't going to invite him in.
Well, I guess I better be getting back. The horse has got to be fed. I'll be seeing you again, Mrs. Wheeler.
Yes, I'm sure we'll see each other, Mr. Monahan.
He put his hat back on and walked off the porch, discontent gnawing at him. He hadn't considered this, the opposition from the women. He was at a loss to put a reason to it. Well, what difference did it make to him anyway? Main thing was to get the fence up. After all, they weren't his women. The Blessing Games were up before daylight. By the time the sun broke over the low hills to the east, they had their horses hitched to the three wagons and were ready to go. Doug Monahan stood there watching the breath of the horses rise as steam in the sharp morning air.
Going to be cold up there in those wagon seats till the sun gets up high enough to take the chill off.
Foley tolerantly shook his head.
Ah, like a spring day. You South Texas boys don't know what cold weather is. You probably never saw frost in your life till you come up here.
Well, I know what it is now. Be careful, Foley. It'd be better if nobody saw you, and if anybody asks you, don't tell them where the posts are going. I'd like to get all the wire and posts in before any trouble starts. After that, they can do what they please, and we'll be ready.
Foley flipped the reins and led off with his wagon. From 100 yards away, he turned.
Don't you worry none about me and the kid. We'll be as quiet as a mouse.
Doug watched until they were well on their way. Turning then, he saw Trudy Wheeler walking toward the spring, carrying a wooden bucket in each hand. It was the first time he'd seen her since he'd returned, except for a glimpse or two of her at a distance as she stepped out on the porch a moment. He stood watching her, admiring her slenderness, her easy way of moving. Then he followed after her.
I'll carry him for you.
Oh, it's you. Why don't you make a little noise when you come up behind somebody that way?
I was afraid you might walk away and leave me.
I might have at that.
Monahan picked up the bucket.
Where to?
The wash pot. We're fixing to put out a washing today.
He walked along beside her, trying to think of something to say which might offset her coolness, but nothing came to him. She contributed nothing either until they reached the big blackened pot behind the house.
Just pour a little water in there and let me sweep out the pot.
He did, and she swept the water around inside the pot with an old worn-out broom, washing away the settled dust.
I'll handle it from here on, thank you.
It'll take a lot of water. I'll do it.
He kept toting water until the pot was filled. While he was doing that, Trudy was piling dry mesquite wood underneath and around the pot. She poured a little kerosene around it from a 5-gallon can, struck a match, and flipped it under the pot. The flame spread slowly, timidly at first, then grew stronger and bolder with the taste of the wood. The warmth of the fire felt good in this chill, but watching it, Doug couldn't help thinking about another fire a few days ago, and a restless spirit moved in him.
I've been wanting to talk to you ever since I got back. Why have you been avoiding me?
Don't you know?
No, I don't, except your dad says you don't like the fence.
The fence itself is all right. It's what we may have to go through because of it that I don't like.
If there's a fight, I'll be here to handle it.
That's just it. You know there'll be a fight. That's why you're here in the first place. You don't really care whether we have a fence or not. You're just looking for a fight with Captain Reinhardt, and by building us a fence, you figure on provoking it.
But I...
There's one thing you can say about the captain. He's no hypocrite. He tells you what he wants and doesn't want, and no mistake about it. We all felt sorry for you that first day, Mr. Monahan. We brought you here because you'd been done an awful wrong. I can't say I blame you, even yet, for wanting to get even. But when you take an old man like Dad and talk him into building a fence so you can provoke trouble and have a chance at getting revenge, you're doing him an awful wrong, too. You're just using Dad and us for bait.
Now, that's not the way it is.
Isn't it? Then maybe you can tell me what way it is. No, I don't want you to tell me anything. I just want you to leave me alone.
Trudy turned her back on him, and he knew there was no use trying to talk any further with her. Not today. He could feel the red color warm in his cheeks. Something between anger and hurt swelled in him. He left her and walked back toward the barn. Stubb Bailey came out of the barn door and saw Monahan's face. He looked past Doug to the girl, who was cutting up blocks of homemade soap and stirring it in the heating water with a wooden paddle, agitating it a lot more than she needed to.
Huh. You got the lecture, did you? I could have told you.
Monahan felt like snapping at Stubb to shut up, but he managed to withhold that. Still, he couldn't look Bailey in the face.
I got a little of the same, but I expect she saved the big load for you because you're the boss. Maybe you ought to take a good look at yourself and do some thinking on what she said. She could be 90% right.
Captain Andrew Reinhardt sat in the heavy oak swivel chair at his big roll-top desk, cavernous eyes blinking in disbelief at his foreman, Archer Spann.
Noah Wheeler building a fence? You must be mistaken, Archer.
No mistake, Captain. Shorty Willis and Jim were scouting that South Prairie when they came up on 3 wagons loaded with fence posts moving northwest on that old freighter trail. There was a big old man driving the lead wagon and 4 others coming along in the other 2 wagons. Shorty said the whole bunch was red-headed and looked like a set of giants. Shorty stopped and asked him where they was taking the post, and the old man told him, "To hell, Sonny, and we'll take you with us if you don't go on about your business."
Red-headed giants? Sounds like Shorty's been drinking. I've warned those boys.
He wasn't drinking, Captain. Jim backed him up. They left the wagons but circled back and trailed him. They went straight to Noah Wheeler's place.
Did the boys look around any? What did they see?
They saw men digging post holes and setting posts. They didn't see any wire, but there were posts scattered along Wheeler's boundary up next to Fuller Quinn's country.
Noah Wheeler. He's the last one I'd ever thought would do it.
The last one? He was the first one to move into this country and break up land away from Oak Creek. He's never asked you about anything or told you what he's going to do. He's got a head of his own, that Nestor has, and it's time somebody bumped it for him.
The captain studied Archer Spann silently, his eyes unreadable.
I tried to get you to let me do something about him when he first moved out there and took up land that you've been using. It'd have been easy to chase him back to the creek. Clear out of the country would have been even better. It's not too late. When we get through with him, he'll pack up and leave and won't look back.
What would you do, Archer?
Burn him out. Tear up whatever fence he's got built. Run cattle into his fields. Show him he's nothing but a farmer after all. No better than the rest of those Oak Creek nesters.
He's more than just a nester, Archer. A great deal more. There won't be any burning him out. And there won't be any R-Cross cattle on his fields either. We'll just ride over there and talk to him.
Talk to him?
He'll see it our way.
It's a mistake.
The captain eyed him sharply and spanned back down a little.
Sir. I mean, sure, we'll talk to him first, if you'd rather. But we can do something else later if we have to. When did you want to go?
In the morning we'll be all right.
I'll get a bunch of the boys ready.
We don't need a bunch of men. Just you and me. We're gonna talk to him, that's all. He'll listen.
I hope so, sir. I hope so.
Archer half hoped Wheeler wouldn't listen. Then perhaps he could give that contrary old farmer what he'd been asking for ever since he'd been out here. Sarah Reinhardt made her way into the captain's office and sat down. She had done better these last few days. She'd been walking some outside, and she seemed to be regaining much of her strength. There was color in her face that the captain hadn't seen in months. Seeing her like this had given him a lift he hadn't felt in a long time. Every cowboy at the headquarters had noticed how much better the captain's spirits had been. At times he would even soften up and laugh with them. It had been a long time since the captain's stern manner had eased so.
What was the matter with Archer Spann? He walked out of here looking awfully mad.
Mad? He didn't act mad. A little disappointed, maybe.
Well, he looked mad to me. What happened?
Briefly, Reinhardt told her.
What are you going to do, Andrew?
Nothing much. Just go over and talk to Noah.
And if that doesn't change his mind, what then?
It will, Sarah. Don't you worry yourself over it.
Perhaps if it were just you, I wouldn't worry about it. But Archer Spann worries me, and lately he seems to have a lot of influence over you.
I always do what I want to, Sarah. No man ever tells me what I ought to do.
No man ever used to.
Archer Spann pulled up his horse and pointed out across the rolling gray prairie.
Yonder it is, Captain, just like Shorty said.
Andrew Reinhardt felt a sharp stab of disappointment, seeing the line of firmly set fence posts stretching several hundred feet along Noah Wheeler's boundary line. All the way out from the ranch headquarters, the captain had tried to maintain a hope that the boys had been wrong. He had known all the time that it was a vain wish, yet seeing the proof now brought a painful letdown.
Looks like I owe Shorty Willis an apology. I'll do the talking, Archer.
Yes, sir.
Turning in the saddle, the captain saw a rider trailing along at a respectful distance, saddle gun cradled in his arm. Reinhardt realized that they probably had been under surveillance for some time. He clenched his fists and had a sudden feeling of being squeezed into a tight corner.
Not a friendly outfit.
Who is he?
Name's Dundee. Used to work for Finch.
I passed the word around. I didn't want anybody hiring any of Finch's hands.
And looks like he's working here.
The captain touched spurs to his big gray horse, moving across the thick mat of cured grass toward the fencing crew. The men who'd been digging holes and tamping in posts dropped their tools and drifted together. The captain could see they were all armed. It was different than the way it had been at Monahan's fencing camp. He saw a thin wisp of smoke rising, and the sight of a campfire reminded him how cold he was. Riding in closer, he kept watching for Noah Wheeler. His fading eyesight made it hard for him to see faces, but he finally recognized the big farmer's tall frame moving toward him from a pile of cedar posts.
Hello, Andrew.
Spann glanced sharply at the captain, surprised at this farmer's casual use of Reinhardt's first name. He had never heard anyone but Mrs. Reinhardt call the old cowman Andrew.
Hello, Noah.
The captain held back a moment, then reached down and took the big hand that Wheeler offered.
Pot of coffee on the fire. Get down, Andrew, and have a cup with me. It must be cold. A little hot coffee would do you good.
The captain caught the pleasant aroma of the simmering coffee, and he felt a strong yearning for it. He was a quiver from the morning cold, which had worked through to his bones. He felt the eyes of the men upon him, however, and he hesitated. He had not allowed himself much familiarity with anyone these last years. Men watched him in awe, and part of the reason was that he somehow stood apart from the others, apart from and a little above them. With familiarity, some of this awe would surely vanish. Many a lonely time he would have given half of what he owned to be able to mix with men and be one of them again, the way it had been 40 years ago. But with his strict self-discipline, he had managed to remain aloof. Aloof and alone. Noah Wheeler held out a cup of hot coffee.
Come on, Andrew. For old time's sake.
The captain, Andrew Reinhardt, stepped down from his big gray horse and took the farmer's cup.
Thank you, Noah.
Archer Spann watched in wonderment. The two men stood staring at each other, sipping their coffee.
Been a long time, Andrew, since we stood around like this and drank coffee together.
A long time and a long way off. Things were different then, Noah. And so were we.
Not so much. We're a right smart older, but I doubt that we've really changed so much.
I guess you know why I've come, Noah.
The fence.
I thought you knew how I felt about fences. I thought everybody knew.
I know.
Then why are you doing this?
Because I have to, Andrew. I've done a lot with this land in the years I've had it, but I've gone about as far as I can go with it open the way it is. I've got to close it in. Then whatever I build can stay.
Fences will ruin this country, Noah.
You're wrong, Andrew. They'll change it, but they won't ruin it. You watch. They'll be the making of the country.
I like it the way it is.
Andrew, you were one of the first white men to come to this country and stay. You could see the possibilities in it, but you had to make a lot of changes first. Now other people are coming in, and there are a lot of changes they've got to make. I've got a dream for my place here, Andrew. I know what I want to do and how I've got to do it. But right now, I can't raise good crops because of the stray cattle coming into my fields. I can't breed better cattle as long as scrub bulls keep getting with my cows. If I can't do these things, then from here on out, I'm standing still. That's why I've got to have the fence, Andrew.
I can send some of the boys by every two or three days and keep the cattle thrown back, Noah.
It wouldn't work. Every two or three days wouldn't be enough. And besides, your men have more things to do than help me to farm. If I want to make anything, I'll have to make it for myself.
The captain saw a rider coming up in an easy lope. He squinted, trying to recognize him. The horseman was less than 100 feet from him before he recognized Doug Monahan.
I should have suspected, Noah. That the man who's building your fence?
Wheeler nodded and faced around as Monahan reined up beside him. Monahan's eyes were cold.
Any trouble, Noah?
No trouble, Doug. We were just talking.
Doug looked at the captain, his face grim.
You've come threatening, Captain. You'd just as well go home. We're ready for you this time. This fence is going up, and it'll stay up.
The captain stared hard at Monahan, and he felt the young man's eyes hating him. It disturbed him somehow. The captain had never tried to be a popular man. He moved in his own way, in his own time, caring little what anybody else thought. He was becoming increasingly aware of the talk that went on behind his back, but much of it came from people who wore a pleasant smile when they faced him. Not in years had anyone boldly shown him such unmasked enmity as he saw in Doug Monahan's blue eyes. It brought an immediate response in kind.
Monahan, I've given you more chances than I'd give most men.
I'll make my own chances, Captain, and I'll take them.
Spann, who had not dismounted, edged his horse a little closer.
Say the word, Captain, and I'll put him in his place.
Noah Wheeler took a step forward, placing himself in front of Monahan's horse.
This is my place, Andrew. Doug Monahan is here because I want him here.
He thinks he has a private war with me, Noah. Don't let him drag you into it.
I'm not in any war, and I don't want any part of one. I'm just trying to fence my land so I can build this place into what I want it to be. That's all.
Restlessly, the captain moved his cup around and around in a circle, sending the remains of the coffee to spinning.
If it was only you, Noah, I wouldn't care. But if you build a fence, others will. Out of respect for old times, I'm asking you not to do it.
Out of respect for old times, Andrew, I'm asking you to understand why I have to do it.
That's your answer?
Wheeler nodded. The captain flipped the rest of his coffee out and dropped the cup into the brittle grass. He stepped stiffly back into the saddle. He reined the big gray horse around and headed out again the way he'd come. He never looked back. Archer Spann rode silently beside him, watching the old cowman's face twist with the bitter conflicts that went on in his mind.
What was there between you and Noah Wheeler years ago? Whatever it was, he seems to have forgotten about. He declared war on you, Captain. When did we hit him?
The captain frowned, his mind still dwelling on something else, perhaps something far back in time.
What? Hit him? What do you mean, hit him?
Burn him out.
The captain pulled his horse to a stop, and Spann reined up, turned back to face him. He had seldom seen the captain's face clouded so.
Whatever else we have to do, I don't want to hurt Noah Wheeler. Doug Monahan's the one behind this. He's the one we want to hit. Cut his fences, burn his posts, run off his men. Do what you have to stop him. But leave Noah Wheeler alone.
Spann rode along silently a while after that, keeping his thoughts to himself.
What about Wheeler's boy?
Wheeler's boy?
Vern Wheeler. The kid we've got with Lefty Jones over in that North Line shack.
I'd almost forgotten. Better let him go, Archer. If he's any account, he'll want to side with his father. And if he's not any account, we don't want him anyway.
Archer Spann smiled a little then. Pleasure of anticipation shone in his dark eyes. He doubled his fist.
I'll go over there as quick as I can.
Archer was waiting in the line shack when Vern Wheeler and Lefty Jones rode in from the morning's work to cook themselves some dinner. He had been there an hour, resting in the warm comfort of the little bachelor stove, and had made no move to fix anything to eat. He would let them do that. Husky young Vern Wheeler shook hands with him, showing him the deference of a well-brought-up youngster to the older man he works for. Lefty Jones, 15 years older than Vern, nodded.
Howdy.
It was plain enough that he didn't think much of the foreman, yet he wouldn't go so far as to be insubordinate. Jones's glance flicked to the stove, then to the coffee pot, which still sat cold and empty on the cabinet top. Range etiquette demanded that Spann fix coffee for the chilled incoming riders if he didn't do anything else. Jones went about the business of fixing dinner, saying nothing. The way he saw it, if there was any talking to be done, it was Spann's part to do it. Vern Wheeler, younger and more eager, tried to be polite by drawing Spann out, asking him questions about the rest of the ranch. Spann gave him short answers, when he answered at all. He waited until dinner was over before he sprang it.
I came over to tell you you're through here, kid. Your dad double-crossed the captain.
Vern Wheeler tensed, almost dropping the dishes he was carrying.
What are you talking about?
He's putting up fence, a barbed wire fence, and after the captain all but begged him not to.
Shaken, Vern put the dishes down on the cabinet and turned back to face Spann.
My dad wouldn't do anything he didn't have the right to.
In this country, the captain tells people what they got the right to do. He said no barbed wire fences, your old man's building one anyway.
And you're firing me for it?
You're his son. If we can't trust him, we can't trust you.
Face darkening, Vern Wheeler took a threatening step toward Archer Spann.
You watch what you say about my dad.
Noah Wheeler's nothing but a dirt farmer who's let himself step over the line, kid, and before we're through, he'll know it.
Lightning flashed in Vern Wheeler's eyes, but the youngster held himself down. Spann pulled a small roll of green bills out of his pocket.
It's been 3 weeks since last payday. I've got you $21 counted out here. Take it and get.
$21?
Vern dropped the bills on the floor.
I got a year's wages coming to me. You've been holding them.
Back wages? You're crazy, kid. This is all we owe you.
You're a liar, Spann. You got it. You've been holding it, saving for me so I could get married. Now I want my money, Spann.
Spann's hand dropped to the butt of the six-gun on his hip.
I told you, boy, you got all that's coming to you. Now pack up and get.
Not without my money, Span! You give me my money!
He lunged at the foreman. Span's hand came up, the gun in it. Lefty Jones grabbed Span's arm and wrenched. Span swung his arm back. Vern Wheeler got hold of Span's arm, trying to twist it to get his hand on the gun. Span wrenched savagely and tore his arm free. The gun glanced off Vern Wheeler's head, staggering him. Span saw his chance then. He lifted his knee to the boy's groin. When Vern had almost managed to steady himself, Span swung the gun again. This time, Vern Wheeler wouldn't get up, not for a while. Lefty Jones sat on the floor, rubbing his hand across his bleeding mouth, still half dazed.
You pack up too, Lefty. You're done. You had no business poking in there. That was between me and a kid.
That boy wasn't lying. You owe him that money, and you're stealing from him.
I owe him nothing, Lefty.
$300. It's all he talks about. The captain wouldn't steal it from him. That leaves you.
Archer Span grabbed Lefty Jones by the collar and jerked him to his feet.
All right, Span. Maybe I was wrong.
You ride, Lefty. Don't even go by town. Don't stop riding for a week. If I ever see you again, I'll kill you.
The cowboy got up, gathered his scattered belongings, and rolled them in his blankets. With a quick glance down at Vern Wheeler, then up at Span, he walked out the door and off the porch. Span gathered up the remaining clothes and personal effects he found around the line shack. He rolled them in Vern Wheeler's bed. As Vern pushed himself to his knees, Span pitched the roll at him. He drew the gun again and stood there holding it, letting Vern get a good look at it.
I could kill you and swear you made me do it, Wheeler. But I won't. You just go on and keep your mouth shut about that money. Mark it up to experience in your old man's fence.
Vern Wheeler got shakily to his feet. He touched a hand to his face and felt the stickiness of blood. He stared blankly at his hand and the red smear that was on it. His eyes lifted to Span. They were glazed by pain, but they held a writhing hatred.
I'll go, but don't you forget me. I'll be back, one way or another. I'll get my money.
Span watched him go, then reached in his pocket and touched the roll of greenbacks there. He felt like cursing himself now that it was over. He had brought the money with the intention of paying young Wheeler. He didn't know what had changed his mind. Some grasping impulse had driven him into a spur-of-the-moment decision, and once it was made, he couldn't back down. He realized now that it probably had been a mistake. He pulled his hand away from the money as if it had been hot. What was $300 to the man who might someday control the R-Cross? Archer Span had been on his own most of his life. As a boy, he had known much of hunger and desperation. And it hadn't been many years since a dollar bill looked as big as a saddle blanket to him. The memory of those grim times still haunted him, still put a cold touch of fear in the pit of his stomach when he thought of them. That, he realized, was what had prompted him to keep the money. In a man who yearned to be big, this was a deeply ingrained streak of littleness that he despised but could not purge from his soul. The bitter anger grew in Vern Wheeler as he started the long ride home. At nightfall, he stopped and made a dry and hungry camp beneath a wind-breaking cut bank, no food or coffee to warm him. He wrapped in his blanket and kept a small fire going through the night, more miserable here than he would be in the saddle. But a thin blanket of clouds hid the stars from sight. He knew he might get lost in the darkness and ride many unnecessary miles. Before daybreak, he was up and traveling again, the cold having driven through to the bone. His head throbbed dully from the pistol whipping. His stomach was right painful from hunger. The bitterness grew rather than subsided. He rode in a swirling, blinding anger. Sight of the fencing crew at work slowed him but little. He paused for just a moment, making note of the fact that there was a fence, just as Span had said. He felt a sharp resentment to that fence. This was what had brought his trouble. Unseen, a rider came up on his left side, saddle gun across his lap.
Who are you?
None of your damn business.
I don't mean to be rough, kid. I just asked who you are. I'll even go halfway with you and tell you my name. It's Dundee. Now, what's yours?
I'm Vern Wheeler.
The saddle gun lowered.
I ought to have seen that for myself. But it would have saved us both some trouble if you'd have just said so to start with.
To hell with you!
The encounter served to fan his anger. By the time he reached the farmhouse, his hand was a tremble on the reins. Trudy Wheeler saw him and set down the basket of dry laundry she was carrying in from the clothesline. She moved toward him in an easy walk at first, then quickened her pace as she got close enough to see his face.
Vern, what happened to you?
Vern Wheeler swung down from the horse and stood weakly for a moment, holding on to the saddle, for the strength had been worn out of him.
Who beat you?
Archer Spann. He pistol-whipped me. Robbed me of the pay I had coming, and all because of that infernal fence out yonder. What's the matter with Dad, anyway?
Tie the horse and come on into the house, Vern. You're cold, and I expect you're hungry.
She took him in the warm house, got the heavy coat off of him, and sat him down in front of the big wood stove. She poured coffee into a big tin cup and placed it in his hands. He held it there, enjoying the warmth until it worked through the cold skin and became burning hot.
I asked you about the fence.
Just then their mother came in, and the answer was delayed. He had to repeat the whole story for Mrs. Wheeler. The retelling of it did little to cool his anger. Trudy already had some biscuits pressed out and rising. When Vern once more asked about the fence, Mrs. Wheeler parried the question.
He's hungry. Trudy, put those biscuits in the oven. Let's fry him some beef.
Vern ate hungrily, letting the question ride while he satisfied the insistent grumbling of his stomach. But when he was finished, he pressed for an answer.
Vern, you need to go and rest. Forget about it all for a while.
Vern looked at Trudy.
Have you heard of a man named Doug Monahan?
The fella that was building a fence for Gordon Finch? Yeah, I heard about him. Wasn't in on any of it, though. I was off in a line camp.
Well, he's the one building the fence.
Is he out of his head? He knows what happened the first time. It'll happen to him again.
Not to him, Vern. To us.
Face clouding, Vern Wheeler set down his coffee. He rubbed his head, feeling the painful swelling where the pistol had struck him.
It started with me.
He's looking for a way to get even with the R-Cross. He caught Dad on his weak side and talked him into letting him fence the place. He knows Captain Reinhardt won't let it go by without trying to stop it. He set us up like a target, and he's got rough men hired out there waiting for a fight. He doesn't care what happens to us, just so he gets his chance at the captain.
Hush, Trudy. You're making it worse than it really is.
I'm not. It couldn't be worse.
And for this Monahan, I lose my job. And all the money I save for a solid year. I lose the place I aim to buy, and I might even lose my girl. I'd like to see this Monahan. I'd like him to get a taste of what I got yesterday.
You won't have to wait long. He's riding up with Dad.
Trudy!
Vern Wheeler stood up, shoving his chair back abruptly. He moved to the window for a good look at Doug Monahan.
No better time to do it than right now.
Wait a minute, Vern. There's no call for trouble, and you're not in any condition to start something.
Mrs. Wheeler turned back to Trudy, her eyes flashing anger.
Don't you know what you've done? You've sent him out there spoiling for a fight, and he'll be beaten again. In his condition, that's all that can happen. You've done to Vern what you're blaming Doug Monahan for doing to us.
Trudy flushed guiltily as her mother's words went home to her. She moved to the door, wishing for some way to stop what she had started and knowing there was nothing she could do. Doug Monahan and Noah Wheeler rode up to the house together and stepped out of their saddles. The old farmer's gaze swept to the porch and caught his son standing there.
Vern!
Dundee said he ran into you. What are you doing home?
Vern's gaze was not on his father, but on Doug instead.
Ask Monahan.
Doug stopped short, seeing fire in the young man's eyes and at a loss to understand it.
Because of you, Monahan, I was beaten up and robbed of my wages and thrown off my job. You put my family in line for even worse than that, but I'm going to stop you.
Vern stepped down off the porch, his fists tight, his angry eyes on Doug. He towered tall above Monahan.
Hold on, Vern.
Stay out of this, Dad.
Wait a minute, Vern. I don't understand what this is all about, but we can work it out some way.
You wanted a fight, now you got one.
Vern, I don't want to fight you. Vern, listen to me.
He had to keep backing up. Vern hit him a hard blow on the side of the face and it jarred him, set his ears to ringing.
Fight! Come on and fight!
Doug kept his arms in close to his body, trying to anticipate where Vern would hit him.
Vern, I'm not going to fight you.
His father stepped in and grabbed his arms.
Vern, stop it. Vern, I don't know what touched you off, but you're wrong. Dead wrong. Now go back in that house and sit down. You got nothing to blame Doug Monahan for. You ought to be thankful he didn't knock your head off. He could have.
Vern pointed his finger at Monahan.
Another time. I'll do it another time.
Come on.
Noah Wheeler turned Vern around and led him back toward the house. Mrs. Wheeler came down the steps and helped. Trudy Wheeler stood on the porch, her stricken gaze following her brother first, then drifting back to Monahan. Noah Wheeler paused at the door.
Trudy, come on in the house. I got something to say, and I want you to hear it.
There was a bench out in the yard. Doug Monahan slumped onto it. A thin trickle of blood worked down from a small cut above his eye. His battered hat lay on the ground. Either he or Vern had stepped on it. Hesitantly, Trudy Wheeler came down off the porch and moved out beside Monahan. He watched her silently, pain in his eyes.
I'm sorry. I'm afraid I've caused this. I wanted it a while ago, but now I'm ashamed.
It's all right. I expect I know why you did it.
You could have hurt him bad if you wanted to.
Looked like he'd been hurt enough already.
Thanks for not hurting him anymore.
Trudy, now.
Noah Wheeler appeared in the doorway looking for Trudy. Trudy glanced once more at Monahan, then went into the house. Paula Hadley took it better than Vern Wheeler had feared.
I reckon we have to put off getting married. I can't buy the land till I find some way to get my money.
They sat together on the sofa in the front room of the Hadley house. Paula took his big hand and her little one. She lifted it to her lips and kissed the bruised knuckles. Tears glistened in her brown eyes.
I don't care about the land, Vern. You're all that matters.
I'm not going to marry you broke, Paula. When we get married, I want it to be open and proud, and your dad approving of it.
It isn't fair. One stubborn old man like the captain ruining things for us this way. We're just little people. We couldn't hurt him. What does he want to hurt us for?
I don't know.
Keeping your money that way. $300 can't mean much to him.
Maybe that's it. It don't mean much to him, and he can't realize how much it means to somebody else.
Or he doesn't care. He's too used to running everything to suit himself. Somebody needs to show him that we don't belong to him. Nobody belongs to him.
Maybe that's it. I was so mad I didn't realize it at first. I watched the Ark Cross push other people ever since I've been here. None of it ever touched me. But now I had a dose of it myself, and I can see it for what it is. They pushed Monahan, and he's fighting him back the only way he can. He's about the first one of us that ever did.
What about your father, Vern? Doesn't he realize what he's getting into?
He sits still most of the time and don't say much. But he sees everything. Maybe he just figured it's time folks declare their independence.
That doesn't make it any easier on us.
Maybe it wasn't meant to be easy. Things that count don't always come easy, Paula.
What are you going to do, Vern?
Go help him, I guess. Find some way to get my money back, maybe. And even if I don't, maybe I can help whittle that bunch down to size.
Vern was heading down the track ribbon dirt street for the road out of town.
Vern Wheeler, hold up there!
He pulled his horse around and spotted his old friend Rooster Preach stepping off the boardwalk in front of a saloon and striding out into the street to meet him. A broad grin cut across Rooster's red, freckled face. He always had looked as friendly as a collie dog. Uncut red hair bristled out over his ears and curled into a tangled mess on the back of his neck just above the collar. A short, uneven thicket of rusty whiskers covered his face, too. Some of them still soft and fine, some stiffening with the arrival of manhood.
Don't be in such an all-fired hurry, Vern. Come on, let's have us a drink together.
You reckon they'd let us have it?
Sure. I got the barkeep thinking I'm 25.
Vern doubted that. He figured the barkeep just didn't care. He swung down from the horse and slapped Rooster on the shoulder.
With all that cover on your face, he couldn't tell but what you was 60. You been out in the brush lately?
Rooster waited while Vern tied his horse, then held the door open for Vern to get in ahead of him.
I was. Cattle been keeping me busy.
Who you working for?
Well, myself, I guess you'd say.
You haven't got any cattle.
I stay busy.
The bartender looked questioningly at Vern Wheeler.
Yeah, I'll take whatever Rooster does.
Bourbon.
The bartender left them a quarter-filled bottle and two glasses, and Rooster watched over his shoulder till the man was gone out of hearing.
I happened to run into Lefty Jones yesterday. He was leaving the country in kind of a hurry.
Yeah, I've been wondering about him. He sure got away from that lion camp fast. I never even saw him leave.
From what he told me, Archer Spann didn't give him much choice.
That figures.
Lefty told me what happened to you. Pretty raw deal about your money, son.
Rooster had a habit of calling Vern son, even though they were the same age. It was his way of showing he'd been around more and knew more of the world and its ways.
You want to get even with him, don't you? Sure you do. And you'd like to get your money back while you're at it, wouldn't you?
What are you driving at, Rooster?
Drink up.
Vern cautiously tasted it. Little as Vern knew about whiskey, he could classify this in a hurry.
I like my women and my whiskey cheap and plentiful.
Vern set the glass down, still nearly full.
Get to the point, Rooster.
Working that lion camp, you ought to know that country up on the north end of the R-Cross mighty well.
Like the back of my hand.
You know where the best grazing is and where the cattle is generally at. You could find them in the dark, and you know the best way to push them out of there in a hurry.
Sensing the rest of it, Vern drew back, a vague disappointment bringing pain to him. But he knew there was no reason for surprise. He'd known Rooster preach a long time, had liked him and ridden with him. But he had always sensed that Rooster would wind up riding the back trails with a fast horse and a quick loop, worth more money in jail than out.
Rooster, I'm not going to steal any R-Cross cattle.
Nobody said anything about stealing. But if you was to take enough cattle to get you $300 back, I know where there's a man who'll take them off your hands and not ever worry himself about the brand on them. It wouldn't really be stealing. It'd just be getting back what they stole from you.
For a moment, Vern was tempted. Why shouldn't he do it? They had taken his money with no compunctions at all.
It's dangerous, Rooster. There's been men got their necks stretched out real long for getting caught with our cross cattle.
They got caught. We won't. You know that country to where we'd always have a way of getting out.
Rooster, what would you be getting out of this if we just took $300 worth of cattle?
Rooster smiled and looked back over his shoulder to make sure the barkeep was still out of earshot.
Now, you wouldn't want them to get off scot-free, would you? I thought we might just take along a few extra head. Sort of exemplary payment, they called it in court. Enough to justify me and another fella or two I know for helping you. You wouldn't have to take them extra cattle on your conscience. As far as you're concerned, you'd only be taking enough for your $300. The rest would be just between me and them other fellers.
Vern stood up, nodding his thanks for the drink, but scowling with disapproval over Rooster's plan.
Well, you can't say I didn't try, son. Still a good offer, and anytime you change your mind, just holler.
Chris Hadley closed his saloon at dusk and walked home, content to let the other places have the night business. A man with a teenage daughter couldn't leave her alone all the time. He moved along with head down, barely nodding to the people he met on the street, for his mind was on other things. Hadley hung up his hat and coat and stood before the wood heater, warming in its pleasant glow.
Good evening, Papa. I'll have supper ready in a little.
Paula, come here and sit down. I want to talk to you.
Paula came, but she didn't sit, for she had supper cooking on the stove.
Vern Wheeler was in town today. He came here, didn't he?
Yes, Papa, he did.
What for?
I guess you know, Papa, without having to ask, but I'll tell you. He asked me to wait for him, and I told him I would.
Chris Hadley sat down wearily.
I knew we'd stayed here too long. Ought to have sold out and moved a year ago. Paula, I'll not let you do it.
I love him, Papa. I'm going to marry him.
Paula, for years I've saved so I could send you back where you belong and give you the kind of life you were born for. I'm not going to let you throw it away on Vern Wheeler or anybody like him.
I don't know anything about any other kind of life, and I don't care. I just know I love Vern Wheeler, and I'm going to marry him.
Paula, you never gave me any trouble when you were growing up. No man could have a better daughter, and I never thought you'd defy me this way.
I never thought I'd have to.
I'll remind you, Paula, you're underage. I can stop you from marrying. I'll send you away somewhere to school until you forget this foolishness.
Paula brought a hand up and closed her small fist over a locket her mother had left her.
It's your right, Papa, but I'll tell you this. I won't forget. As soon as I'm of age, I'll come back and I'll marry Vern Wheeler.
Doug Monahan was worried. The barbed wire hadn't arrived. The work had gone on without trouble. Occasionally, a rider would show up on the high rise out yonder and sit a while in the gray grass, watching. Eventually, Dundee would drift his way, and the man would get back on his horse and fade out of sight. The line of set posts was a long one now, stretching well over a mile already and waiting for the wire.
Stubb, something's wrong. That wire ought to have been here a week ago. I wish you'd take a horse and ride over to Stringtown. See what's the matter.
Stubb returned, bringing the kind of report Doug had expected.
That wire's sitting over there in the depot gathering dust. They won't anybody haul it.
What about that freighter, Slim Torrance? I paid him half of the freight in advance.
Stubb Bailey dug a wrinkled, sweat-stained check out of his shirt pocket.
He sent it back to you. Here. Sheriff McKelvey seen you over there that day and knew there was something up. He hung around till he found out what it was. He went to see this Torrance. Now, it seems like Torrance did something or other over here one time that wasn't strictly according to the statutes. He never did say just what. Anyhow, the sheriff told him if he brought a spool of that wire into this county, or even had it sent, he'd yank him up by the scruff of the neck and throw him in the jailhouse over at Twin Wells. So that's the reason we ain't had any wire. Not apt to get any unless we go fetch it ourselves.
Then we'll go get it ourselves, and we'll haul it right through the main street of the Twin Wells.
Well, that's asking for trouble.
We already got trouble. That's just telling them we can take care of it.
He left Stubb Bailey to oversee the post-setting job, and Dundee to continue his watch. He took three wagons and the five blessing games, and because he wanted to go, Vern Wheeler. Vern had come back from town with his anger at last expired. He had apologized and asked to be allowed to help. A husky boy, he'd made a good hand ever since, digging holes, tamping posts, throwing in where the hottest and the hardest work was. Some deep-seated determination seemed to be driving him. He was setting a strong pace for the rest of the men to follow. They left as soon as darkness had lifted enough that they could see the wagon trail. Doug and Vern rode horseback, the blessing games on the wagons. The morning was uneventful, but about mid-afternoon, a rider broke over a hilltop and spotted them. He sat there a while, watching, then pulled back and disappeared over the hill. By the time the wagons groaned into Stringtown the second day, Monahan was positive they were being followed. Several times he had glimpsed a rider far behind them. The man never got any closer or dropped any farther back. Now, as they loaded their wagons at the depot, he saw a man sitting his horse across the dusty street, watching. When the rider turned his horse away, Monahan caught a glimpse of the R cross on its hip, stamped with the small horse iron. He looked questioningly at Vern Wheeler.
Name's Bodie. Kind of a straw boss for Archer Spann sometimes. Span's got any friends at all, I reckon Bodie's one of them.
Starting back, Doug knew, within reason, that they would find a reception committee somewhere on the trail. He wished they had Dundee and the other men with them, but he couldn't afford to leave the Wheeler place without protection.
We'll just have to face up to it ourselves. Seven of us and burdened down with loaded wagons.
Don't you worry none, Doug. You got 13 men the way I see it. Them four kids of mine will count for two men apiece, and I'll count for three.
13's an unlucky number, Foley.
For whoever tries to tamper with us, it is.